First of all, it's great to see you all. Makes my day. I would like to start off today by just saying one word. That's because I forgot everything I was going to talk about. And that's also good, because if I was just going to start with something preconceived, it would be boring. So that one word is change. It is a word which is often underestimated. Let's use an example. There are a lot of TV shows or movies dealing with time travel, where you go back in time. And usually the motive is to change something that should have been changed. And the idea being that, well, you would change something very radically in your life that you did wrong or was not correct. Or you would change yourself, change the way you are to make it better. So I sometimes think about that. What if I were to go back in time into a particular situation and change something? Now, the problem is, who is changing that thing? Interesting question. Is it me now changing that thing then? Or who would it be? If it was me now, let's say going to 1963, can you imagine that? First of all, I would not even know where I was. I would take a long time to figure that out. I would not understand my relationships with anybody around me. I would have no idea what it was I was expected to do next anyway. The 15-year-old me had a whole life. I don't remember it. If I were to go to school, I would not even remember the names of most of the people in the school. I would not know what class to go to. I wouldn't know how to do the math anymore. So the idea of going back in time and making change is really not practical or even comfortable. So I concluded that what is the use of lamenting something that happened then? I cannot change it. Even if I were to go there to change it, it would be such a disaster and catastrophe. I could be self-absorbed and simply say, why? I should have done that. I could have done that. I would have done that. So when we speak about change, well, what are we speaking about? Let's understand right now our situation right in front of us. We have a certain set of circumstances. We have a certain set of people. The world around us is very developed. So what can we actually do? Now, there are some things we can do. We could make some changes in our life. I can move this glass of water to the other side of my desk. I can build a window in the wall. I can get a new job. I could try to make a friend. This last one is important. The other ones are, we can change positions of things. We can change the environment. We can shuffle stuff around. But when it comes to making a new friend, we enter into another form of discussion, another kind of territory. We can change some stuff. We change the clothes we wear to make it something we think somebody else would want to see. We can figure out how to present ourselves by removing some information and bringing forward other information we think which will make that interaction better. Once we make that relationship, started that relationship, after a very short time, who we are rises to the surface. We can't hide that for long. For example, there are some places in this world which are better to live in for me than other places. And maybe for some period of time, 5-6 months or whatever, I will transform in that new place and feel very good about it. But after a while, I will be who I am because I can't avoid it. So when we speak of this word change, it's really interesting. Right now, a lot of people are talking about change, societal change or financial change or currency change or political position change, environmental change. People think about change all the time. And some people are working on themselves. They want to change themselves. There's a whole school out there in different names for self-evolution, self-transformation. Doesn't matter whether it's a religion or a spiritual group or a self-help group or a psychological group or an astrological group or whatever. The idea ultimately is the same. I'm this way now. I want to change into that way, which I consider to be better. And it's very interesting because when we go into these ideas, we feel very inspired because now I'm going to change. In French, there's a great saying, plus tu changes, plus tu même chose. However much you change, you stay exactly the same. And that's scary when you think about it. When we look at ourselves, we see we are who we are. We usually feel the same way. We feel basically the same way. We ultimately have to deal with ourselves. Ultimately, no matter how we're avoiding it, we have to ultimately deal with ourselves. Some things evolved. Children usually are very self-absorbed. If some other child takes the toy, they get very upset. It's mine. Not all kids are like that, but it's kind of like that. In other words, we have this self-absorption. And as we grow, we accommodate more people around us for our own self-interest. But self-interest remains throughout all of this world. So actually, we don't really evolve beyond self-interest. We just evolve in the way in which we express it. Who we are is very much basically the same throughout our entire life. We are us. I am me. What does that mean? Well, let's see how that relates in our environment. Often, the what we do is very much dictated by our environment. Things build up to a certain point, and our choice window is quite small. So what are we really doing when we enter into a spiritual group? What are we really doing when we accept a spiritual philosophy? Some people think we here are not very good. We need to get to that place where everybody is very good so we can all be happy together. Not good here. Much better there, always perfect there. That's the great spot. We got not good here, we got to get to there. And we do that by doing stuff, disciplines. The more disciplines we do, the more we get close to that. Is that true? Everybody's wondering. If that's true, why don't I feel that now? If that's true, then why aren't those persons over there evolving in the same way? Now I ask the question, is that true? I would propose maybe we're looking at it entirely the wrong way. What if we look at it in another way? What if instead of looking at it from the point of view of where we are now and considering that bad, and we got to change everything, change, evolve, get to somewhere over there. Let's look at it in the opposite way. Let's assume we are there. Let's feel it. Let's act that way. Let's look from that point of view down. It's impossible, isn't it? I don't think so. There's another way to feel. Enter spiritual mysticism. In spiritual mysticism, one is feeling. Now, the problem with using the word feeling is it has a bad name in spiritual circles. You say feeling, people think happy and sad and love and hate and anger and pleasure or whatever. Feelings. And that enters into the category of like emotion. The problem I run into when trying to explain spiritual mysticism is the usage of these words, like feeling, and then the mind of the listener translates that into emotion, as if feeling is emotion. Well, it's not. If I feel the pen, is that an emotion? I'm talking about energy. For example, me. That me who never changes. That me who is already there. That me who is eternal. That me who is right now not different from Krishna, God, Radha and Krishna. We're so absorbed in the difference. Even now, we're so absorbed in the difference of the change because it's different. We got to change it somehow to make it one. Lord Chaitanya brought us one and difference. The difference has its value, but the oneness has the spirit.
Oneness has the spirit.
Spirit. The oneness is has the spirit. The oneness is this where the spirituality is, the love, the beauty, the bhakti. It is not that I'm not one now. I'm only different now. And later on, I will become that oneness too. We add this element of time. We add a dimension of time and place and circumstance to spirituality. In spirituality, pure spiritual mysticism, there is no time, no place, and no circumstance. If I say one and different, everybody will say, yes, different. I have embraced the difference entirely. But what about the oneness? Well, I mean, Lord Chaitanya said one and different. So why do we only embrace half of it? So we will say, well, because we are just so different, no connection, fallen, blah, 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 this and that. So I have to place myself in a methodology that takes me, embraces me as this difference, and then brings me step by step, somehow or another, to that oneness. But if I say the oneness, then I'm an impersonalist. Okay, we're all great at difference. Now let's embrace oneness. Let's try spiritual mysticism. Lord Chaitanya didn't say I'm one and different at some other time or place or circumstance. It's right now, right here. It's me. It's very easy to feel the difference, but it's similarly very easy to feel the oneness. You have to let the difference go. Of all places where the difference resides, where does it reside the most? In the mind. The mind is a vast repository of differences, dualities and likes and dislikes and ups and downs and hankering and lamenting, all flying through the mind, and right and wrong and better and worse. This vast repository of duality. Does it have value? Maybe, but not very significant. The mind is a problem, not necessarily a solution. Similarly, the mental platform, this subtle mental platform, is a problem. It's an energy. It's a mental energy. It's an energy no different than any other energy. There are people who have the capacity with their mind to suck out other people's energy or suffocate other people's energy. They are so self-absorbed in themselves, in their minds, that when they come in contact with others, They just suck them dry. Because that's what they do. They live in this world of all this difference, all these ideas, all this kind of stuff, and they make everything about it. For spiritual mystics, these people are dangerous. One should just let them be somewhere away. You could put one of these people in front of a mystic yogi, and the mystic yogi will become powerless. They will just suck them dry. And they will proclaim, this person is bogus, because they have no idea about spiritual mysticism. Spiritual mysticism is not an idea. It's a feeling. Not a feeling. It is feeling. Let's make it easier. There's thought, the mind, and then there's experience. Spiritual mysticism is experience. And it's where one can experience that non-difference, that oneness of me and the divine. It's why Lord Chaitanya forbid certain persons from coming into their kirtan, that, what was it, the Srivas Thakur's house or in Navadvipa. Wherever they had kirtan. Once Lord Chaitanya was chanting and said, I don't feel the ecstasy. Something is wrong. And they found someone hiding. They threw that person out. They could experience that again, the ecstasy. Doesn't mix. Feeling and experience doesn't mix with the mental platform, people. And when we say feeling, again, not just emotion. In fact, emotion is in various ways an extreme. Let's say you're in Goloka or wherever, and you're experiencing the emotion of love or whatever, as gopi or whatever, in whatever relationship. That's where emotion works very well. Because feeling is first. When you have experienced to live on that way of feeling, emotion with those personalities naturally flows. When you have that feeling, you feel energy. It doesn't have to be with your hands. You feel it. You live within it. You float within it. And your interactions with others are flowing in that way, on that level. Two people on that platform cannot hide, cannot pretend to be something you're not. You are. You know you are. They are. They know they are. That is what it is. I would not try to be something else. You would not try to be something else. Why would we? We already have who we are, that one. Why would we hurt the other? Why would we consciously harm anyone? There might be reasons. Again, we live in a reality around us where our choices of change are very limited. Our job were to say, if we were to use the word, as representatives of the deities, is to assist others to come to that state. We are not interested in changing people. What would we change them to be? We only are interested in them being who they are. Now, we can talk for hours about not doing this and not doing that and avoiding this and watching out for that. But if spiritual mysticism is an experience, not doing something is not an experience. Maybe it's a choice of which experience to do, but if you're not interested in that, that's not a choice. That's not something you would choose. And if you had to choose somehow or another that experience for some reason or another, doesn't matter what it is, You wouldn't be very happy with it. You wouldn't want to keep it. And if you end up in such an experience, which you don't like, and all you do is think about it, oh, why did I, why, oh, poor me, you're holding on to the wrong thing. And if you keep the experience of self, your integrity, the integrity of being, that I am who I am, and there's no need for me to change that, neither is there a need for me to change others. You only want to facilitate. You can't even help. You can't help people. You can facilitate people. Sometimes just to be there for that person and envelop them in that energy of that spiritual mystical experience. People who are not living on the platform of the mind, but who are potentially mystics, as soon as they are enveloped in that energy, they go, oh, yes. They go, that's it. I want that. So you facilitate that, but that is you. You are that does not necessarily mean something impersonal. If you want to connect to the deity, if you want to actually experience bhakti, if you actually want to have the divine connection, you first have to realize yourself. You don't realize self by not being something. You realize self by experiencing that something. But then one says, I can't. But then I say, find some deities. The hidden, wonderful experience, the wonderful facility of the divine being standing there, waiting for us to come before them and just experience, see them in a different way. Just allow their energy to flow to you. Just accept. This is a selfless act to just accept. Don't doubt, don't edit. Don't push away. Don't try to be something. Don't worry. Don't expect. Just accept. Just let it flow to you. Accept the energy of the divine. There's no need to fight it. You are that energy. And you can feel it. That's an experience. That's spiritual mysticism in a nutshell. It's the fundamental art. It's the fundamental act. It's the fundamental surrender and just experience. There is no better way to approach the deity. And when you're ready, send your love to the deity. And then come to the most advanced of all spiritual mysticism, where your love and the deity's energy meet, the deity's love and your love meet and create that us. The whole problem of impersonalism dissolves in an instant. Without I am, there cannot be we are. I don't have to struggle to be. I am. Nothing I can do can change what I become because I'm already. I just have to accept. This is spiritual mysticism. But when the mind is involved, cannot understand. And don't try to do this around people who are living on the mental platform. It's pure suffocation. It's the worst torture you can be put through. Why do you think this lecture is by invitation only? Can you imagine as soon as that comes in, everything destroyed? Can one say there are two classes of men? No. But one can say that people fit into categories, if you want to label them. Labels are useful as far as social organization, as far as managerial principles and so many other things, which are needed. Without these things, even a society of spiritual mystics cannot function because there's so many practicalities to life. And so this lecture is not about that, but it's just at the end, I'm recognizing the need. My desire is to facilitate more and more people to understand actual spiritual mysticism, because that seems to me, my opinion, to be the basis of Lord Chaitanya's movement. So I will stop there, take a break. You want to read number one?
Yes.
For those who don't speak Russian, there is a question about change of the past. If by returning to a traumatic experience, we manage to change our attitude to this experience with the help of another, of some therapy or a person, does this not contribute to the personal sense of wholeness in the present moment, allowing it to become even more complete, filled with new facets and greater awareness? Yes. You're not changing the past. You're changing the present. You're visiting a memory. The memory does not exist in the past. The memory exists right now in the present. So you're examining something in the present and concluding something. From the point of view of, let's say, how things are working, this is exactly the same as the way everything works in the present. You perceive, you decide, you do. But in this case, you remember, you say, that stinks, I'm going to do something else, and you resolve and you change. I'm not exactly answering this question probably in the way you want it, but the way I'm answering it actually makes more sense. Well, I'm not expressing to you yourself, I'm expressing me here. Today, we just happen to be sharing a common experience. Sometimes I do that. You are there, you are having expectation. You have within that expectation, you send that other aspect of things which you would, you know, like resolved. I wanted to talk about this, but it didn't fit within the lecture. One of the states within spiritual mysticism is knowing. Knowing, it's just there. So if you allow it to be, and you're sensitive to what it is, you also integrate that into your energy, and it naturally gets expressed when the opportunity is right. If you were to ask me, how did the knowingness happen? Can you please systematically explain it? I can systematically explain it. Because from knowing to the details of knowing, it's easy to explain it. If you're down in not knowing and you were to hear the systematic explanation, it is not necessarily a pathway to get there. I find this is a very interesting thing, like when people talk about these very sophisticated sutras or Sankhya things or sutras, yoga sutras or others, and they give these steps and details of exactly how you go from here to there. I sometimes smile because I appreciate that struggle. But I can say, yeah, I hate to use this term with great conviction, but okay, let's say I'm pretty sure, just to cover the bases, that you don't go from the bottom up. It's that somebody up, wrong word, but someone in a state of knowing explained to someone who's not in a state of knowing the steps by which that person got there, even though they did not use those steps. And I know that sounds funny. Knowing doesn't need the detail. Knowing is. Like when you're a musician and you're in the zone and you're just playing, you never think of the detail. You're just painting some sound. If someone were to ask you, how did you do that? Well, then you'd have to think about it. And then you would have to cook up or come up with some explanation about maybe scales and keys and, you know, how it felt there and how you transformed there and when you went over there. But you never thought about any of that. So this is one of the problems with explaining explanations. It's a difficult situation because it doesn't actually express what is. Okay, Kamala Mala is asking, how is it possible to simultaneously feel oneness and difference in the same moment? That is mystical. It's not something you can explain. It's something you can only experience. But for the sake of discussion, we are. We means two. In Russian, is there is and are? Is there is and are in Russian? Do you have the, because in Swedish, it's not. There's no have and has and is and are. It's just one word. So do you have that in Russian?
In Russian, there is equivalent.
Okay, good.
Literally, it means we exist, but we are, yes. We are.
Okay, so let's say we means there's two. And when we say are, it refers to a combination. I am, you are, we are. Oneness, and at the same time, the two are different. They come together again as one, a new unit. So we're one and different to make the we. We're not feeling the difference. We're not actually feeling the oneness. It's a new state, but it's only possible in oneness and difference. Fundamental beauty of Lord Chaitanya. I think I just answered the next question too, but let me try to understand that better. Unity. I don't speak in terms of unity. It's not unity. It's together. It's not unity. Unity is a very tough word to deal with. A union means where difference finds its place together. And in that togetherness, there's love, there's communication, there's exchange, there's sharing. Okay, question four, go to four. This is the question. I'm just repeating the question. It is not my opinion. It is the question. It seems sometimes that chanting mantras is something that most people do on the mind platform. How can chanting help to feel oneness? And how can it be done out of the mind platform? Yeah. No, I would not phrase it that way. I don't want to touch the subject of how people chant. I don't know how they chant. Neither do you. You assume it, perhaps through observation, perhaps through seeing how you feel sometimes and then projecting it on others. Nothing wrong with any of it. But if I have to present the question, I'm not going to accept that point of view. But I really appreciate the question. I brought up Lord Chaitanya. It's all my fault. I brought up the chanting. And I'm okay with that, because when one has that state, when one is experiencing that spiritual mysticism, the chanting on that platform is wonderful. It's sublime. It's the entrance into so many experiences. So it's not that you're going to chant and come up with a methodology to not have some kind of mixture on some kind of other platform. It's not like you're going to figure that out. But when experiencing that spiritual platform And then chanting, it works fine. It's perfect. Now, the question may be, how do you get from that state over there to this one? If you're chanting over there, how do you get over here to the mystic? Well, the answer is you can't go from there to here. What you do over there, that's something else. That's part of your whole life and how you want to deal with it. That's up to you. I am not saying it's wrong or bad or any of that. I'm simply talking about the spiritual mysticism. What I'm suggesting, if you want really an answer to the question, is the only way to do it is to be in that platform of experience, of that connection, and chant, but not as a means to an end, not as a method to get from here to there, but as an expression of sharing and love. Bhakti is not a means to an end. Bhakti is, period. Number five. More important, more powerful. Why do we have to compare them? Why must we compare? What is the point of the comparison? What are we trying to prove with this comparison? Why do we have to say this is better than that and this is not, therefore this is less? This is good, that's good. Once you are in that mood of experience, everything has its place and its time and its value. Number six, I better read in English. Is it possible to extend the principle of simply accepting the energy of the deities to life as a whole, to accept it as a manifestation of the divine will? Perhaps in this case, the desire for change fades away. We get into a state in which we simply want to be, just like in the altar room before the deities. Isn't the concept of acceptance and the desire for change antonyms? Well, no. Acceptance isn't a concept. It's an action. You just accept. Now think about it. Before you just accepted, you were something else. To go from there to here, a change took place. Okay, you're accepting and you are feeling and you are experiencing. But at one time, you got to go to the bathroom. You got to get up and walk. Obviously, what we are talking about here is that these transformations of our spiritual mystical state are in and constant interaction with the existence around us. You cannot avoid that now. And that will be the way it is. In this life, that's the way it is. And in Goloka Vrindavan, change will take place to increase pleasure. It depends on time. It depends on how you want to express. That's all. Because expression is the natural state of the soul. And expression means change. Is Lord Chaitanya also inconceivably one and different from Krishna? Well, since Lord Chaitanya is Krishna covered in the mood and complexion of Radha, well, yeah, there's that element there, sure. But if you're going to try to use it in the same way we use it in relationship to ourselves, with Lord Chaitanya, it gets tricky, and I would avoid that, and don't bother. Go to number nine. Well, that's a whole nother lecture in and of itself. Narcissists, they are a whole species. Can you be a narcissist and be a spiritual mystic at the same time? No chance. And therefore, a person who is a narcissist is simply thinking about self and is basically absorbed in self, which is very much in the mind, and maybe some feelings, even if they feel bad, it's about themselves. Oh, me, oh, me, oh, me. So that narcissism is their nature. It's scary. These people are scary. Another question. Sometimes I think that ordinary people are more evolved than me, but they are far away from spirituality? Question mark. Is it possible that a person without any spiritual practice can be very evolved? Well, I think the question is not phrased properly. So let's deal with that. What do you mean by spirituality? What do you mean by evolved? If you think somebody's more involved than you and you're a spiritualist, then how are they far away from spirituality? But in the second part of the question, it's much better. Is it possible that a person without any spiritual practice, meaning disciplines or, you know, formal thing, can be very evolved? Well, sure, of course. If you were to assume that the only evolution that ever happened happened right here in this particular life, then the question might make sense. But people have been going through so many lives, and in these so many lives, they've evolved in so many ways. When they take birth, they carry with them this enormous amount of their evolution. You should never speak this way, but just to answer the question, let's say you take birth and you're at 15% evolution, but somebody else takes birth and they're at like 85% evolution. And you join the Hare Krishnas and you start doing all this chanting and you follow principles and you think of yourself as very, very spiritual and very evolved. And maybe after 5 years, you might be at like 20% evolution. But you know stuff because you read it. So you are superior. And then you meet an 85% evolved person. Again, I would never use these numbers. It's just the question. You meet an 85% evolved person. And you start telling them stuff. And they go, okay, thank you. Gotta go now. Yeah. I'm gonna stop there. And I thank you all very much. And I wish you the best of luck, the best of love, the best of happiness, prosperity, and health. And I know you're gonna have a ton of problems, but I wish you the best anyway. Bye. See you all. Thank you, Maha.
You're welcome.